One is a goofy, if at times serious, hacker romp about the Cold War. The other, a hyper-serious sequel that really loves zooming in on things. War Games. They remade it.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of They Remade It. I'm your host, Stuart.
And I'm your host, Jacob.
And just to cut to the meat of things, as we usually go right into the weather, holy sweet merciful Christ, it's not almost 100 degrees today. I'm so happy.
I don't know what it was, because we had like that intense heat wave for 3 weeks where around this area and a lot of other parts of the Midwest, the heat index was at like 120. But there was one day last week where I think it was like Saturday... Friday, it was still scalding hot, and then the next day, the low was like 57.
I know.
It's been whiplash since then. But yeah, I've been enjoying the lack of humidity.
Yeah, I think, at least on our end, because I'm on, you know, I'm in the American South, and I'll add more detail. I live kind of near the coast, so we got a bit of the weather from the recent hurricane.
Oh, Hillary.
I mean, like, we didn't get hardly any. Like, they always talk a big thing of it, but we're far enough inland that by the time it got to us, it was pretty much just like a day of rain. But after that, like, once that passed over, pretty much everything slowly started getting better and better. And then this morning, I went out to get breakfast, and then my fucking thermometer on my car, it's 68 degrees. I was like, I could cry. This is so nice.
That's beautiful.
Oh, it's beautiful. And, like, I live in an area where it is about as swampy as it can get where I live, and just this whole fucking state, really. And it's the kind of thing where whenever it's humid enough, you can actively see the humidity, like, with the naked eye, and it's the worst. But now it's like I can actually, like, see clear skies, and not everything feels all slightly murky. It's nice.
Man.
Because it's not 150% humidity anymore.
Well, I mean, that sounds beautiful. It sounds like it's really the environment where you should be able to get out and go and do, you know, like, play in the park, or maybe go fishing, if that's your thing, a beach, you know? So...
So Starfield came out the other day. That's the early access of it, at least, which I obviously paid extra money to get. That's been the last few days for both me and my girlfriend. We both are diehard Bethesda fans as it is, and it's been getting a lot of like assorted crap from various sources online as far as quality goes. I can understand some of it. Like there's a lot of like whole things of like. Traveling between places, it's basically all just fast travel stuff. There's not a whole lot of integration between space and planets and everything. There's not a lot of great mapping systems. So far, I haven't really gotten the downside of it. Like, I get it a little, but beyond that, I think it's fine. I think it's just a new system to get used to more than anything. And we've really barely scratched the surface of the game at this point. It does have a very bad habit of not tutorializing things well enough, so we've been figuring out a lot of shit on our own. But beyond that, there's something about Bethesda games. I think Bethesda has, knowingly or not, kind of mastered the art of carrot and stick, where it just keeps kind of like dragging, like pulling you along with enough things of like, oh, what's over here? What's this thing I can do? What's this thing this person's talking about? And it expands itself just enough to want you to make it so that you want to keep going. So I'm having a blast with it. I think it's all that in a bag of chips. So I've been trying to ignore people's comments online about it mostly.
Very nice. I'm looking forward to playing 20 hours of it and then just dropping it because I'm bored. Open world games usually tend to affect me, but I think it arrives on Game Pass in about 4 days from when we're recording this, and I actually have an alert set because it's like, oh cool. I mean, that's the main thing, because I'm always like, I don't know about open world games, I don't have the time, and they don't suck me in like they used to, but if I'm gonna get to play it for free, I mean technically because I already play Game Pass, then why not, you know, at least try it? So, and I've seen some of the gameplay vids and stuff, so I know kind of what I'm, you know, expecting, but Yeah, we'll see what I think when it finally comes out.
I'm telling you for the sake of your completionist kick that it might drive you to the brink of insanity to do that, just because it is such a big thing. But at the same time, it also It looks bigger than it truly is, which I think, again, that's just Bethesda games in general. There's enough within it that you can just kind of stick to the stuff that you want to do, that it doesn't really become that much of an issue. If you want to go for 100% completion, I imagine it's not near as hard as it seems. But at the same time, I have seen you go batty over things that I did not think could have a completionist angle to them. So who knows?
Yeah. Well, like I said, since it's like an open world thing, I've chilled a lot in my quote unquote old age. Heavy quotes on that. But
Yeah, we are both. Are you 28 at this point, or 27? Sorry.
I'm approaching 28 in a few months,
Yeah,
but
I turned 27 in a couple months. So
age
we're.
doxing. But
I mean, yeah, I think we've established that relatively early on. Of we are basically just old geriatric men in the body of young men.
maybe we did. That's
Yeah.
possible. But yeah, I've chilled a lot when it comes to completing open world games. I tend to drop them more often than not. Like I don't even finish. I know I've mentioned on the show multiple times that because I have to do everything, I've never finished Skyrim because I get bored of it. So I know
Yeah.
how the game ends, but I've never seen it firsthand. So.
That's fair. It's a pretty boring ending, to be frank. But beyond my Starfield addiction, because that's only been for the last few days, I've actually also been playing a few other ones. I've been playing, I can't remember if I mentioned last time, I've been playing through the third Dragon Age game, Dragon Age Inquisition,
Yeah.
which I found pretty good. I've come up to the end now, and I've just kind of dropped it near the end, which tends to happen with me in BioWare games, weirdly enough. Where I don't really have the desire to finish it up because I haven't really connected with the characters as much as I wanted to. I'm realizing I don't really give a shit about all of this. I care much more about the Mass Effect series. I enjoy the story in that a lot more, and I think I mentioned before, I think it's just because there's a certain level of relatability that makes it easier for me to grip into, whereas just everything in Dragon Age is so steeped in so many different like pseudo lores and like very thinly veiled like forms of like prejudice and racism and everything, where it's just like, God, this is just a slog to try to get through. And so it's just never it I kept trying to get into it as much as I could, but it just never got me. So I really don't have the desire to finish it up at this point. Despite I think I'm on the literal next to last level. But I'm just like, nah, I don't care about any of these characters. I don't know why I should even continue this. It's like so that one's pretty much probably gonna be shelved for now. But beyond that, I also found another random one. I also have Game Pass, and they've been releasing a few games in preparation of Starfield that kind of have a similar feel, like some sci-fi games, some exploration games. And one that popped up was one called Everspace 2. Hadn't heard of Everspace 1, frankly, but what it actually amounts out to is that it's basically a flight sim game, but in space. If you've ever played a game called Rebel Galaxy, it's kind of a similar vibe to that, where you're entirely in your ship. You never walk outside of your ship. The only time you even see your person outside of your ship is during these like concept art cutscenes whenever he interacts with our other characters. I've been oddly gripped by it. It's not that deep at the end of the day. It's a pretty stock standard modern sci-fi plot. But for some reason about it, the controls of the ship and everything and just the gameplay loop that it has you go on, it's oddly addictive. The ship controls really well. There's a lot of intuitive features to it and everything. And I don't know. It's like I said, it's not that deep, and it wouldn't be worth more than the price of free, frankly. I might pay at maximum $10 for it, but it's got a decent thing going on. It doesn't overcomplicate anything that it's going for. It's clear that I am one of the minority in that sense, because there's a thing on Xbox games that when you play and when you get achievements that very few other people have received, you get like an extra little like oh like an extra like sound bite that plays whenever you get the achievement. And as I was playing through it, after I got past like the first two or three main storyline missions, literally every single achievement I got was the rare achievement, meaning that barely anyone has played it beyond like the first like maybe hour or two. So I'm like, oh no, I feel bad for these developers. There's a lot of effort here. It's pretty sad.
I've been seeing
And
more
so
and
I
more of that lately on like games I'm playing on PC through Game Pass or like Steam, which doesn't have a special thing for it, but like the achievement will glow when you look at it. And I guess it's just because the games I'm playing, because it's like these aren't hard and they aren't really bad, but I guess no one else is playing them, so I get old.
I don't know what's up with that. Like, there's not as much. I really do kind of blame just how review systems have gotten at this point. Like, everyone's been like saying, like IGN gave Starfield a 7 out of 10 review, which in IGN's is basically raking it over the coals. It's just gotten to this point where the 1 through 10 rating system is so heavily one-sided at this point, where anything other than a 10 is dog shit. And it's I think it's for to that end, it means that a lot of smaller things, a lot of things that are just kind of average, aren't getting the kind of love that they would have used to, you know? Like, I think Outer Space 2 is great. I think it's a great time. It's a nice little it's a lot more casual than a lot of these other games are these days. Dear God, I will never play the new God of War games. They seem like such investments.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of those things, because, like, I you know, God of War 2018 and God of War Ragnarok, I did 100% complete both of those, but that's less a gameplay thing, because the gameplay gets really tiresome after a while. It's just, I do like the story, you know, the story, and it's weird, because God of War is one of the only franchises that's out there right now that I actually do still get invested with the story, even if on a surface level, it's a lot of elements of it are kind of basic or played out. I don't know, it still draws me in for some reason, but yeah, as far as reviews go, I don't look at them anymore. They're pretty well useless, because anything, I mean, if you look at it from, like, one being absolute dog shit and 10 being perfect, which would make sense in most people's minds, 5 would be average, but any more, the way that review sites, you know, make reviews, anything less than 6 is actually unplayable. Like, not just bad, but, like, broken. And that's just kind of the way it's, I don't know, I think the system doesn't work. It can't entirely be removed, because ratings are so baked into, I mean, us as a society, the way that we like to look at things, we like collecting things, we like organization, and we like, you know, comparing, which is what we do on the show. But people are like, I like this more than that, so this is the way the scale is going to go. But I wish, if ratings weren't tied to monetary gain, I wish we could just get rid of them entirely, because they don't do us any good.
Yeah, that's a sad fact. It's like, a big enough studio is basically just going to pay for their reviews, so...
Right.
And then small developers who can't afford to do that end up kind of getting fucked. So.
And the people that actually write the reviews get paid peanuts. So none of this is worth anything, except for the people at the very top. I wonder why.
Which, hey, apparently, in getting into the more topical side of news things, the writers and actors strike that's going on. Apparently, they have actually also been in talks with video game developers of talking about a strike on their end as well.
I saw that. Very exciting.
So that might also be getting addressed on that end as well. So, hooray for the summer of strikes. Well, going into the autumn of strikes.
In Washington Post, you're a bad group. Stop writing articles trying to shut this down. This
is important. Shut the fuck up. Yeah, y'all got money for good PR, but you don't have money to pay them better? Okay. So if it weren't clear, listeners, we are both very pro-strike and pro-union. At least I am. I don't want to necessarily put words in your mouth, but I am. If you need to start making your little, like, political charts of me, yeah, put it a bit farther left than where you have it already.
I probably won't discuss my actual beliefs, but if you just listen to me talk, you can probably pick up on it pretty easily.
Yeah, no. I don't necessarily wear my shit on my sleeve, but I'm not covering it up either.
Right.
So. But yeah, anyway, to get off the... Because, you know, God knows there's no amount of politics we'll be talking in this episode. That is pretty much the extent of what I've been consuming. It's pretty much just been games. We recently actually just watched the live action first Addams Family movie. I can't remember any of the actors in it, but you know, the
Raul Julia. Not,
yeah, I don't know.
He was Gomez. I have not seen that in a long ass time. I know that Raul Julia is in it, and I know that Christopher Lloyd is Uncle Fester. Christina Ricci, that's the other one. I forget everybody else. Just those three are the only ones I remember.
Hannah and I just watched that the other night, because Hannah's actually trying out for, there's a Addams Family musical that she's trying out for, so we were watching it for research purposes.
Very nice.
Yeah.
For research, I love that.
Yeah, of course. But it was just fun. It holds up. There's not a whole lot to be said about it. I've seen it plenty of times. I think it's a damn decent movie. But beyond that, that's basically it. I haven't had a whole lot of extra time for stuff beyond, you know, just playing games in my off time. It's hard to sit down for a movie sometimes, whereas a game I could just pick up for like 20 minutes.
I'm glad that I can, early in the mornings when no one else is at the office, I can just put a movie on while I'm working. I mean, one, I'm able to multitask, which helps, obviously. I'm able to focus on both things at once. But also, it's just like, I watch a lot of shit that way. Trash.
That is a smart way to go about it. I still work from home, so I could technically do that, but I don't do so well whenever I'm... Working from home is good for me, but at the same time, if given the option, I will go chill on the couch to watch something for a few minutes. So yeah. Whenever I work, I gotta just, like, dedicate myself to the work.
I understand.
Yeah, no, that's the extent for me, if you've got anything more substantial.
Oh, I do. Well, firstly, I'm glad you brought up Addams Family, because that's the perfect segue. Because the first thing is I've rewatched a couple of things that I haven't seen since I was younger. Things like Tim Burton's Mars Attacks, which doesn't hold up as well as I remember, but it's still fun, at least, which is good. And Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which I still adore. Still love that. A lot of camp there. But speaking of Addams Family, one of the rewatches I did was the Casper movie from the 90s.
Oh my god.
Which does not hold up at all. It's atrocious. But yeah, Christina Ricci is the main girl in that, which I don't know if I knew. I mean, that's one of those things where I had Casper on a VHS tape and used to put, like, that's how long ago I had this thing. And so I didn't know anything about anything. And now I watch it and I'm like, oh my god, how did they get literally everybody that has ever existed to show up in this movie? Because yeah it's like Eric Idle and John Cassier and Clint Eastwood, and I'm like, what the fuck is happening? It's
Dan Aykroyd shows up for a sec.
He does. It's bizarre, man. But not great. Not great.
I still, what little hazy memories I have of it, I'm like, that's an odd movie.
Yeah. I was like, oh, Brad Garrett is the fat ghost. Why do I not remember that? You know, now it's so easy. It's impossible to not know who, like, know when you hear Brad Garrett's voice. But as a kid, I was like, I don't know who the hell that is. Ugh. But yeah, those were those were some rewatches. As far as new things for me, there were a couple of new items that I watched that I hadn't seen before. I finally watched Zack Snyder's Justice League, and I was like, oh, this is just as bad as I thought it would be.
Hey, it means I don't have to watch it.
Yeah, you're safe for now. But another, like, a weird one I had never even heard of that I watched, it's a Michael Caine movie from, like, 1990 or 1991 called A Shock to the System, which is really, really strange. It's like a watered-down American Psycho, where Michael Caine is this businessman, who basically gets tired of the lifestyle. Primarily because he's old and, he, you know, the new folks are coming in and he doesn't get a promotion, but a younger guy gets it. And he, like, snaps and starts killing people. It's you know, it's kind of got some American Psycho blood in there. But it's very strange. It's not well put together. Michael Caine is, like, sleeping through this movie. There's, like, one scene where it feels like he's actually acting. But just... as far as bizarre things go for this movie, okay, first of all, he's the main character, but he also narrates the movie, but he narrates the movie as if the narrator is a different person looking on this guy. He's like, oh, look at this guy, glad I'm not him, until, like, the end of the movie, and all of a sudden the narrator is speaking in the first person, which is just whiplash. It, you know, very poorly assembled and confusing in that regard. It's like, narrator, great.
I chalk it up to it being British.
Maybe. Well, he's British. The movie's not.
Oh, well, then I have no fucking clue.
Well, maybe whoever wrote it was, but, and then, like, something else that doesn't really make sense. So he's killing people, but he's not actually killing people. He's basically setting up Jigsaw style coincidence traps so that people end up dying. Like, he shows his wife, who is apparently a harpy. He shows her how to turn on a light bulb in the basement, and he's like, okay, so when you turn the light bulb on, you have to grab the base of it, and also there's this metal pipe over here, make sure you grab that. And then he, like, sets it up and, like, undoes some electrical tape or something so that when she goes to do it while he's at work, she electrocutes herself. And that's basically all of his kills in the movie, is he's setting up these weird coincidences so people end up killing themselves. He's like, I didn't have anything to do with that. So, you know, not as exciting as American Psycho. And then...
yeah.
And then also there's, like, a weird magic angle. There's not actually magic in the movie, but Michael Caine seems to think that he's a wizard because he can do these things. And he keeps, like, talking to himself and saying magic phrases when he thinks people are going to die. He's like, bippity boppity boo. And then it cuts to a boat exploding. It's so strange, and it's not well put together. And I think that the version I watched, which is the official version on Amazon Prime, by the way, I think it's a TV edit, because there's one scene where he's going off and he's saying fuck, but it's like, you don't know who the hell I am, and it doesn't match up with the lip flaps at all. Just bad. Just bad.
You know, it's times like this that I remember, that I realize why there aren't a lot of Michael Caine, like, vehicle films. That most, he's pretty much, I've only ever really actively seen him in side roles, with the only notable exception for me being the original Italian Job, which I didn't enjoy as a movie.
You're
So
right.
it's like I didn't like him as the main character. I thought he was pretty dry, like dry for me even. And I normally like dry characters, but yeah, like he's an interesting man. He seems to be a very intelligent and well-read man, but I don't really find him that interesting as an actor. So I don't, at least not in the
Yeah.
main role, you know.
I think he's fine in supporting roles. Literally, the only exception that I can think of would be Muppet's Christmas Carol. Like, everything else,
Yeah.
like, I think he's fine as, like, propping up other people. I mean, he's great in those Batman movies, regardless of whether you like him or not. Like, I think he does a good job. I don't know.
Yeah, it's yeah. Weird guy.
Very strange. But last one, last movie, not to belabor everything, to finally get to the new. I saved the theater one for last, but I saw Oppie. I did
Oh.
get a chance to watch Oppenheimer in the theater, all 3 hours of it.
Jesus.
And you know what? It kind of flew by. It's
Really?
one of those things where I'm not I don't consider myself a hipster, but sometimes I feel like, oh, everyone's loving this. Am I really gonna love it? And it's like the hype for Oppenheimer is real. Like it's a well-made, good ass movie that knows how to do suspense, it knows how to do character moments, it knows how to create a protagonist, craft a protagonist that you're technically rooting for at parts of the movie, but overall, like, you're not supposed to side with him.
Yeah.
And it makes that very well known. And I don't know. It's you know what? One of the more interesting things is that obviously this is all leading up to the bombing of Japan. Those two
Yeah.
cities in Japan specifically, but like that has a presence in the movie and it affects his mental condition, but there's not a huge focus on the act itself, which I think is very interesting. And it kind of makes it more compelling. And I've seen some people complaining about that, like you're underrepresenting the damage and the horrors of the war. And I'm like, well, one, I don't really think that's the case. I don't think they're underrepresenting it. I just think that the focus is more on this man rather than the
Yeah.
atomic bomb. And then
Almost like the
secondly,
movie's
like,
named after him.
yeah. And then secondly, there's tons of other movies that you can watch if you want like that experience on it. It's not like this is trying to rewrite things that happened.
Saving Private Ryan hasn't gone anywhere, y'all.
Yeah. But no, it's a great movie to the point where I was actually thinking about going to the theater last week and watching it a second time, but in 70 millimeter because there were openings for it at the theater that's near me. But I had a bunch of health issues and I didn't really feel
Yeah.
like going. But I haven't like I don't think in my entire life I've ever watched something twice in the theater because I've never been compelled to. But I almost did for Oppenheimer. It's a great movie. I love it and I recommend it. Obviously, there's a length thing with it, and I've sort of softened on my like long movies shouldn't exist, but if they're gonna be theatrical releases, I really do think we should bring back the concept of an intermission. I don't think that I've heard of
Yeah.
movies having an intermission since The Hateful Eight. Like, we need to get back to that if we're going to be pumping out like 3, 3.5 hour movies.
Yeah, no, it's just absurd otherwise. It's
Yeah.
like, you know what? Yeah, I'd like to have a nice little break. Just go hang out for a minute. Have like a 10 minutes, get a snack, maybe a drink.
Do some stretches. Yeah, especially if you're watching it
Yeah.
in the theater like IMAX, where it's like, wow, these seats are so tight and close together and cramped and there's no leg
Yeah.
room. But yeah, that's Oppenheimer.
No, I doubt I'll get out to be able to get out to the theater at any point to see it, but I'll try to at least see it whenever it's made available. Yeah. That period of history has always been kind of a mixed bag for me. I've done research topics and papers on the Manhattan Project before, and you know, it's a bit of a rough subject, I won't lie. So I'll have to see how to see how I feel about
There is one thing that, of all the things that stuck with me from the movie, there's one thing I don't like, and it's like, I don't know, Bugs Bunny says, "What's up, Doc?" and Mickey goes, "Ho ho." Oppenheimer goes, "I am become Death, Destroyer of Worlds." And it's like a weird drop kind of early in the movie where he's actually having sex with this woman, and she pulls out like a Sumerian Bible or something, like some old text, and like asks him to read, like translate it in real time, and that's where the quote comes in. I was like, I don't know if that's like history or not, but that's very goofy and
I
strange.
know that is where the line itself comes from. It comes from a Sumerian deity, I
Oh,
believe.
right. I mean, I don't know
But yeah,
if
reading out
that's
during
like
sex, no. There's no
that was
way
the
in
original
on
context that we knew about that happening. So.
Yeah, no, like we learned that for like he gives an interview long after the fact where he describes the where the line comes from. Like he just like that's where the line we all know actually comes from.
Right.
It is like, you know, him saying it on this interview. And I sincerely doubt it's in en flagrante delicto, as it were. That's absurd. That is absurd.
So yeah, if anything's going to suck you out of the 3-hour Oppenheimer film, it would probably be that scene, but I thought everything else was great.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. No. Good shit.
Yeah. Well, I guess we've been talking a lot about I've been talking a lot about Cillian Murphy as an auteur. So it's probably time that we switch over and start talking about another auteur, that being Matthew Broderick.
Oh God. I have a theory that Matthew Broderick and Charlie Sheen are two halves of a clone that escaped containment.
That is very interesting.
I don't know why I think...
subscribe to your newsletter.
I don't know why I think that, and I didn't know where else I could bring it up. I just wanted to bring it up at the top of things before we get into the more serious topics, but I will. My newsletter will be releasing on a bi-decade basis.
It's War Games. Firstly, we'll be going through the synopsis for 1983's War Games, directed by John Badham and an uncredited directorial debut of Martin Brest, as well as written by Lawrence Lasker and Walter F. Parks. During a surprise nuclear attack drill, many United States Air Force strategic missile wing controllers prove unwilling to turn the keys required to launch a missile strike. Such refusals convince John McKittrick, played by Dabney Coleman, and other NORAD systems engineers that missile launch control centers must be automated, without human intervention. Control is given to a NORAD supercomputer known as Whopper, standing for War Operation Plan Response, programmed to continuously run war simulations and learn over time. Meanwhile, David Lightman, played by Matthew Broderick, a bright but unmotivated Seattle high school student and hacker, uses his IMSAI 8080 computer to access the school district's computer system and change his grades. He does the same for his friend and classmate Jennifer Mack, Ally Sheedy. Later, while war dialing numbers in Sunnyvale, California to find a computer game company, he connects with a system that does not identify itself. Asking for games, he finds a list including chess, checkers, backgammon, poker, and tic-tac-toe, along with titles such as Theater-Wide Biotoxic and Chemical Warfare and Global Thermonuclear War, but cannot proceed further. He visits two hacker friends, played by Maury Chaykin and diner terrorist Eddie Deason, respectively, and these friends explain the concept of a backdoor password and suggest tracking down the Falcon referenced in Falcon's Maze, the first game listed. David discovers that Stephen Falcon was an early artificial intelligence researcher and guesses correctly that the name of Falcon's deceased son, Joshua, is the password. Unaware that the Sunnyvale phone number connects to Whopper at the Cheyenne Mountain Complex, David initiates a game of global thermonuclear war playing as the Soviet Union while targeting American cities. The computer starts a simulation that briefly convinces NORAD military personnel that actual Soviet nuclear missiles are inbound. While they defuse the situation, Whopper nonetheless continues the simulation to trigger the scenario and win the game, as it does not understand the difference between reality and simulation. It continuously feeds false data such as Soviet bomber incursions and submarine deployments to NORAD, pushing them to increase the DEFCON level towards a retaliation that will start World War III. David learns the true nature of his actions from a news broadcast, and FBI special agents arrest him and take him to NORAD. He realizes that Whopper is behind the NORAD alerts, but he fails to convince McKittrick, who believes David is working for the Soviets, and is charged with espionage. David escapes NORAD by joining a tourist group and, with Jennifer's help, travels to the Oregon island where Falcon lives under the alias Robert Hume. Falcon here is played by John Wood. David and Jennifer find that Falcon has become despondent, believing that nuclear war is inevitable and as futile as a game of tic-tac-toe between two experienced players. The teenagers convince Falcon that he should return to NORAD to stop Whopper. Whopper stages a massive Soviet first strike with hundreds of missiles, submarines, and bombers. Believing the attack to be genuine, NORAD prepares to retaliate. Falcon, David, and Jennifer convince General Berenger, played by Barry Corbin, to cancel the second strike and ride out the attack. When the targeted American base reports back unharmed, NORAD prepares to cancel the retaliatory second strike. Whopper tries to launch the missiles itself using a brute force attack to obtain the launch codes. Without humans in the control center as a safeguard using the two-man rule, the computer will trigger a mass launch. All attempts to log in and order Whopper to cancel the countdown fail, and disconnecting the computer is discussed and dismissed, as a fail-safe mechanism will launch all weapons if the computer is disabled. Falcon and David direct the computer to play tic-tac-toe against itself. This results in a long string of draws, forcing the computer to learn the concept of futility and no-win scenarios. Whopper obtains the launch codes, but before launching, it cycles through all the nuclear war scenarios it has devised, finding that they all result in draws as well. Having discovered the concept of mutual assured destruction, the computer tells Falcon it has concluded that nuclear war is a strange game in which the only winning move is not to play. Whopper relinquishes control of NORAD and the missiles offer to play a... Whopper relinquishes control of NORAD and the missiles, and then offers to play a nice game of chess. Everybody in the base celebrates.
And then everybody clapped.
Including me, because the movie was over.
steady on, don't give opinions too soon.
Okay. Next, we'll be talking about the direct-to-video thriller film War Games: The Dead Code from 2008, directed by Stuart Gillard, screenplay by Randall Bedott, and story by Rob Kirchner and Randall Bedott. Will Farmer, played by Matt Lander, has a neighbor named Massad, played by Alberto Del Burgo, who asks Will and his friend Dennis, played by Nicholas Wright, to help him with a computer problem. While looking at his bank account, Will realizes that there's money constantly being funneled in and out and coming from an unknown location somewhere overseas. Will steals $5,000 from Massad's account to gamble on an online gambling site featuring games based on terrorist attacks. He does this in order to fund a trip that he can take, to Canada for chess. In doing this, he ends up winning $25,000. The game is a sophisticated piece of U.S. government spyware, however, and this is run by an advanced AI system called Ripley, designed to find terrorists. Later, following school, Will returns home to find his neighbor under arrest. Massoud gives Will an envelope full of cash to pay for a plane ticket. Unknown to all, Ripley is misinterpreting the data it received and overreacting to the situation, having labeled Will and his mother, Susan Glover, as bioterrorists. On his arrival to the airport, Will finds a large number of security guards. He evades them and meets up with his friend Annie, played by Amanda Walsh. The increased number of security guards is due to Will's friend having been detained at the airport and him revealing information about Will after having seen Will's mother, a biochemist, also being detained and screaming frantically. Will manages to crack the government network, only to be found by the police and a mysterious man in an overcoat. Will and Annie are chased by the police until they get lost in the subway system. They escape and meet the man in the overcoat who says he nearly started World War III. He is revealed to be Professor Falcon, here in this movie played by Gary Reinecke, who had helped design Ripley. They travel to a power plant outside a dam, and all the while, Falcon reveals to Will the nature of his father's death and his mother's relationship to the government strife. Once at the power plant, Falcon shows them the Whopper, War Operation Planned Response, from the original War Games film. It is now being watched over by Ivan, played by Vlasta Varana, and operating a power grid. Falcon reactivates Whopper and with his backdoor password, Joshua. Meanwhile, Ripley hijacks a Predator drone with missiles and a nuclear warhead on board. Falcon instructs Whopper to attack Ripley with a faux script full of cultural references. Whopper floods Ripley's system with games, but Ripley shuts down and reboots to clear the attack. Ripley then uses the Predator drone to destroy the facility housing Whopper. Will and Annie flee the facility before it's destroyed, but Falcon remains in the building. The couple is captured and taken to the room where Ripley is stored, where they discover that Falcon has transferred Whopper's program to them. They use Whopper, through Joshua, and internet users to stage another denial-of-service attack. Ripley attempts to self-destruct by launching a nuclear warhead at Washington, D.C., but Whopper again attacks Ripley, playing through two nuclear attack scenarios that result in total annihilation. As Ripley is designed not to harm itself, the third scenario is presented as a nuclear attack on Washington, D.C. Having learned the concept of futility, Ripley stops responding after the scenario is played out. After Ripley relinquishes control, Will asks Whopper if he really would have launched the missiles if Ripley had decided to continue playing, to which Whopper cracks wise, and the movie ends with a bunch of zoom-ins and zoom-outs of Philadelphia. Also, important cast members, mostly members of the government and secret agencies in this film, that are not explicitly called out in the synopsis are Colm Feore, who plays T. Kenneth Hassert and is the voice of Joshua in the movie, Maxim Roy, who plays Tina Rash, and Chuck Shimada, who plays Bill Carter. And those are your plots, ladies and gentlemen.
The early 2000s up to 2010. Why are you so weird?
Now that we're, you know, I, you know, once we started being able to create movies that didn't have to go to the theaters, but could still like be directly marketed towards, we just got an influx of these DVDs that you would just find in bargain bins at Walmart, and no one will have ever seen these otherwise.
The movie poster has a look of a Tom Clancy novel.
Yeah. It's that boring, like, ugly orange.
Like that orange with like the weird kind of like pseudo pixelation thing going on in the background, like lots of like weird, like, you know, movement lines. Seriously, look it up. The War Games Dead Code poster. It I swear it could just be a Tom Clancy novel.
Ugh. Well, if
yeah, if it weren't for being as terrible, I say that I've never read a Tom Clancy novel. They might be terrible.
I can't speak to Tom Clancy as a writer. I can't even really speak to the movies based on his novels either, because I don't know what I've seen of them.
I like them. I've seen a few, but that's neither here nor there.
Right. What is here is Full Circle. All right, starting off, we have Alan Blumenfeld, who played Matthew Broderick's teacher, Mr. Liggett, in War Games. He was also one of the cops at Santa's Warehouse in 1996's Jingle All the Way. I just have to put this out there. I did a bit of additional research on Mr. Blumenfeld, and I found out he voiced Glottis and Boyd in Grim Fandango and Psychonauts, respectively. So he's worked with Tim Schafer a good deal. And Grim Fandango is one of my favorite games. So it's like, oh, I had no idea.
We played a lot of that one.
Oh, yeah. I've beaten that game many a time. Jesse D. Goines was a sergeant in War Games and played Joe Cox in 87's RoboCop. Jesse D. Goines. The biggest one we have here is Matthew Broderick, of course, who was David Lightman in War Games. He played Professor Harold Hill in 2003 in the 2003 adaptation of The Music Man, which seems like a lifetime ago.
God, yeah.
Surprisingly enough, William H. Macy was uncredited in War Games as a NORAD officer, which I did not see him or recognize him in that movie when I was watching. And he voiced Justin in The Secret of NIMH 2, Timmy to the Rescue.
See, that also feels like a lifetime, if only for the fact that I'm trying to forget it.
Can we just go over the fact that just William H. Macy is such a big actor, especially now since he had his run on that Shameless show. He's so big, and the only two movies that we've covered him in have been War Games, in which he is nigh unrecognizable because he's just some background guy, and then a voiceover in what is quite possibly one of the worst movies we have ever talked about on this show.
Yeah.
Very unfortunate.
Of all the things for it to be on our show.
And finally, we have Nicholas Wright, who played best friend Dennis Nichols in War Games The Dead Code. We've seen him before in another sequel. He played Floyd Rosenberg in Independence Day Resurgence.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is either.
I was just going to be like, I have no idea who that is.
No worries. Oh, but that is Full Circle.
Fantastic. And, you know, I'll let you have your break after all that and state simply for the fact of, man, I didn't expect to be talking about nuclear weapons quite so much on this episode, but damn. I need to figure out if there is a technical difference between an atomic weapon and a nuclear weapon. I think it's technically the same, but I'm willing to bet that they refer to the Manhattan Project as an atomic weapon before nuclear. But that's neither here nor there.
Man, I should know this, man. I just watched Oppenheimer, which is exactly the same as getting a degree in nuclear engineering.
Oh, so, yeah.
I'm sorry I failed you.
I mean, having gone to a school that provided nuclear engineering as a major, I've talked to some of the folks that said they were in nuclear engineering. I can't imagine they're too much smarter than just watching a single movie. I've met some stupid folks that are put in charge of some of the most powerful technology of the modern era.
What an indictment.
Yeah, I mean, there's different kinds of intelligence, you know. All I know is it's always funny. There's a joke that went around there that if you got a major in nuclear engineering and you also had a minor in explosives engineering, you were put on a few lists before you graduated. which might not be true, but it probably is. Which is always just funny to think about. Which, you know, I'm reminded a lot of that stuff whenever I'm just watching War Games, like the original War Games, where it's just this kid just doing wacky shit that might end up in nuclear destruction. I'm like, This is the most believable part of this movie. Like, at first I was gonna be like, this is absurd that this kid is just able to fuck around and figure out all this stuff and nearly destroy the world in the process. But having known people in a similar position to that, no, I can see it. I can fully understand it. It's just, it's kind of wacky.
Why, you just, you know, because like a kid doing like a bunch of crazy stuff on the computer, it's just, why was Matthew Broderick always put in these roles? He's always like some shithead that I don't want to root for. Even if he's supposed to be the protagonist saving the world, I'm like, I don't care about you in this movie.
See, this is what I mean about him and Charlie Sheen being clone brothers. Like, it's a similar vibe.
I like Matthew Broderick in what? The Lion King and Election. I don't know if you've seen Election with him and Reese Witherspoon. But
I've seen part of it, actually.
Even though I like that movie, he's a shithead in that movie, too. He's just a teacher who's a shithead. Yeah. So.
Yeah, like, there's nothing redeemable to be said about the man himself in these movies, but, you know, he got the job done. I really liked the Dr. Falcon character. I thought he was really interesting. He was, like, a lot of very, you know, I keep being surprised by how many movies from the 80s just had a lot of very real conversations about, like, the inevitability of destruction and death and all that stuff. Between this and Red Dawn, I was like, man, there's a reason the 80s had so much wild bullshit going on if these were the movies being shown.
This and Red Dawn and Straw Dogs, like, we're having a rough year on the podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
My God, yeah, like, not intentional. I promise. Two of those were mine, though, so I don't know what to say. That says about me. it's just like, you know, just casually bring, like, they finally find this guy, and the synopsis doesn't go into the point of like, yeah, he definitely finds nuclear destruction to be inevitable, but he has a fully like made peace with it kind of attitude of, oh yeah, we're just 3 miles from a major nuke location, we'll be gone instantaneously. Meanwhile, the rest of the world's gonna suffer. It's like, Jesus.
You,
like,
don't want to suffer, do you? While he's playing with his fucking pteranodon, like, kite? Like,
yeah. It's just this strangely fascinating man and everything that he's done and, like unintentionally put into motion. And it's just, I found him very compelling. It's understandable that he's not the main character, but I kind of wish he was. And then he gets completely recast in the remake / sequel / is it a sequel? I don't know.
It is 100% a sequel, because this is the same character, and Whopper with Joshua exists in it all these years later. He even mentions that when they started making Ripley, he spoke up about it and they tried to have him killed or something. So,
gotcha. Okay, because like, they somehow even recast Joshua / Whopper. I don't know what you're meant to call it. Because it seems clear in the original that, yeah, the doctor calls him Joshua, and it's the Whopper system that he's operating within, basically. Yeah. But then in the sequel, it's kind of a bit of both. Like, Joshua is Whopper and Whopper is Joshua. I don't know.
Well, they almost treat it like there's a ghost in the machine in the sequel. Like, Falcon believes his dead son is inside of Whopper. And I think that's why he calls it Joshua.
But he refers to it in Joshua in the original more in the sense of he recognizes it as his creation and not just this functionary thing that it does. So...
yeah, and
there's a much more nuanced performance in the original, is what I'm saying.
It's weird. So a couple of things. I guess it's probably for the best, because this movie is, I mean, not to show my ass too early, but this movie's bad. But
yeah,
so maybe it's better that John Wood didn't come back for this movie, because he died in 2011, so this probably would have been like one of, if not the last thing that he did professionally. Mm-hmm. Maybe better he got out.
You would have thought they'd get someone at least who also has an English accent, though.
Or at least kind of looks like him. Like, I know I'm constantly referring to this man on the show, but John Wood kind of looks like a thinner David Warner. And this guy they got in the Dead Code, Gary, I don't know if it's Reinick or Reinicke. I said Reinicke in the synopsis, but this guy doesn't look like John Wood at all.
Yeah, no, it's not even close. I think the best way to describe the 2008 movie as a whole, imagine, if you've ever seen the show NCIS, imagine that with the budget of a single episode having to be stretched over the course of an entire feature-length film. That's basically this. It's a lot of those, like 20-teens, like pre-2010 era graphics and things, like kind of that late era where it's, you know, lots of zoom features and everything, lots of, like, all the computer graphics have, like, they can't just, like, shut down. They have to, like, zoom off into a little wormhole as they all get, like, all the windows get closed off and everything. All the CG is, like, at least serviceable, but still very dated. It's a lot of, like, explosion PNGs behind these characters. It's silly. And, to top it all off, is Canadian. in production. It's that was my first sign when they were talking about being located in Canada. I was like, oh no, this is gonna be one of those.
So this movie is not to bash Canada,
obviously, no, but there's a trend with Canadian productions, especially in this sort of case, where they are very much the poor man's war version of American productions. In this case, literally.
Toronto specifically is a great place to go and film for TV.
Yes.
I think for tax related reasons and just the way the city's set up. But so no shade at Canada, no shadies at Canada. But have to remember that this is also a direct to DVD movie. So there is this movie is frankly too much. There's bad CG effects when they have them. There's strange line readings, and I don't know if you caught them. There's a couple flubs where the director probably should have had a second take, and I kept rewinding from my bed because I was like, what did he just say? That's not English. And there's the movie. I talk about this all the time when we cover sci-fi movies from around this point. The movie is disgustingly shot, one with all the zoom-ins and zoom-outs, but also the color filter. So many of these films are washed out in either gray or blue to the point where they're driving through the snow and they make it to the power facility where Whopper is. There's no gray, there's no blue, it's just daylight, and I'm like, why can't the movie look like this? This looks beautiful compared to everything else here. It's very frustrating.
The concept of color correction has always been a thing, but with the modern era came the ability to do, like, computerized color correction, and they really didn't get that down until, I'm willing to say, Mad Max Fury Road. Like, because there's a few scenes in there that are straight up just in basically black and white, but it's like more like black and blue, and the shots are awesome. It looks amazing. It's incredible. And I think that's like, okay, this is actually good color correction.
But at least the entirety of Fury Road also doesn't look like that, though, because there's beautiful desert shots during the day that pop and almost look like a graphic novel. So I think it has equal balance also.
Yeah, but those are also color corrected in many cases, but they're color corrected to be more vibrant rather than the opposite.
Yeah, they're like yellow.
Yeah. And so I think everything prior to that has been a little hit and miss, and if there's ever been a phrase to describe movies between the period of like 2001 to 2009, it is hit and miss. For not just the technical aspects, but for the content aspects, because if I have to hear the word terrorism any more than I already have in my life, as being the child of a military brat, I've heard that phrase so many goddamn times. Every time we're going into a movie that's in that period that's even slightly connected to like modern day politics, I'm just waiting on someone to say the word, and this one just did it in abundance.
Oh, man. Well, then I'm sorry that I called Eddie Deason a diner terrorist in my synopsis.
Well, that's that's funny. That's an ironic twist on the formula. See, that's having fun with it. It's, you know, it's like I get tired of having the same meal every day, but then someone all of a sudden brings it to me with, like, you know, ingredients swapped around. It's like, oh, this is hilarious.
Okay.
That metaphor didn't really work, but goddamn it. Like, I think there's a lot of metaphors that didn't work in this fucking movie.
I understand. No worries.
Yeah. So that's kind of like, I guess, you know, to kind of segue off of that, just kind of comparing the content of both of these, it's hard necessarily to give one movie shit about the politics of the day without bringing it up of the other, because, you know, the obsession over NORAD and nuclear weaponry and nuclear attack back in the 80s was really prevalent, and I'd say worthy of decent fear, but I'm sure it's of a similar feeling that it is today with the concept of terrorism, where it's like, at a certain point, it's just a nebulous thing people throw around to be like, oh, we need more defense spending. And so that's just kind of, it's kind of just funny to see the two compared against each other, which is still weird that the 2008 one still has the possibility of leading to nuclear war, even though ostensibly it's meant to be about against like more international terrorism, which isn't as equatable to two superpowers coming to blows.
Which can I just ask a question? I've already stated that I watched The Dead Code basically half passed out in my bed. I had to rebuild some of the synopsis from scratch because it left out a lot of details and no one gives a shit about this movie. But I don't understand the game aspect of The Dead Code. Like, as it's written in the synopsis, it's like they use a front-facing gambling game site on Ripley to track down terrorists. Why? Are terrorists more likely to play online betting game? Like, I'm still lost on that point, and it's been days.
I don't know, and I thought ultimately the game aspect in the original movie is basically just going, this is a computer that was originally designed to play games, and it was that concept was built upon in order to simulate nuclear exchange. So like, yeah, it like simulate nuclear exchange in the form of like a game, and that aspect of it makes at least some amount of sense. But then in the new one, there definitely is a few moments where the main character is like playing a game and is like playing like a counter-terrorist kind of like a, like if, you know, Counter-Strike was all of a sudden brought up to like the nth level. But beyond that, I'm not positive because they don't have the same backstory as they have with like Falcon. Because like Falcon like talks about like, okay, yeah, he was a, you know, he was a, you know, designer in like, you know, game theory and that sort of thing. And like, you know, created programming, you know, programs to, you know, make computers be capable of playing games and actually like learning from mistakes and everything. And I guess that's just meant to be, I think the only way you could understand it is if you've seen the first movie, really, even though it's not necessarily so directly linked. I'm not positive because I almost completely forgot about the gambling thing. Like that almost like came and went in my brain. I was like, oh yeah, that. And when you brought it back up, I was like, oh yeah, that was a thing they talked about. So I mean, I'm not positive.
It would be one thing if he was gambling with a lot of money on this site and then like, I don't know, because I'm not writing the movie right now. I don't have the patience for that. But if Ripley, like, recognized on the internet that someone was transferring large sums of money, and then the bioterrorism thing happened, maybe that would be one thing. But specifically, he goes to this gambling site, which, by the way, too sexual. I don't care if it's 2008. Too sexual.
Yeah, no.
He goes to this gambling site, they bet $25,000 on it, and then it immediately goes to the government base where people are like, yeah, this guy bought a ton of money, let's get a track on him. What? Like, I don't understand. Yeah.
I don't. It would have made more sense if it was like, you know, like that sort of dark web shit of like, oh, and like they were buying shit on the Silk Road when that was still a thing. It's like, it would make sense if it was something like that. But the fact of it being specifically gambling is, yeah, that's odd. I don't really get where the link ends up happening at that point. So, and then they really kind of just try to bring the game thing back at the end where they basically just rehash the ending of the original where they just have, you know, with a Whopper system take over and just start teaching the concept of futility to Ripley, which, like, I don't necessarily vibe with that ending for the simple fact of it seems like they were establishing Whopper / Joshua in the original to be kind of unaware of what he was doing, of being, like, basically a child, of being like, okay, I didn't recognize that this is something that I need to learn from, that I need to avoid. And he learns it in the end. It is kind of just like, oh, okay, I know better now. Ripley, on the other hand, at active time seems actively malicious. Like, it's actually, like, protecting its own existence. At one point, changing a fucking stoplight somehow to make a guy get hit by a car. Which was absurd when that happened. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Is this thing just Am from fucking I Had No Mouth and I Must Scream? Where it's able to control everything in the world now? What the hell is happening?
Yeah, this thing is actively howling out and trying to kill people. Because it's like, in the original, not only is Joshua or Whopper or whatever represented as sort of like a childish thing that's learning, but it's also, like, it does, you know, it does games. Like, it doesn't actually think that this there's terror, that things are real. It knows that it's a game. It's just that it just so happens to have access to real life missiles, and it doesn't really understand that concept. Whereas Ripley, like you said, is changing hijacking predator drones to blow up buildings. Like, it's actively reaching out over
into the real world
and, like, destroying, like, trying to destroy people. Ripley kills Falcon.
Yeah, he does. She does, like, without hesitation.
And I think at least the concept is interesting, to have one computer teach another computer about a lesson in futility. But like you said, the way that Ripley is, like, presented up to that point, and the fact that she literally says, like, what a strange game, the only way to win is not to play, like, literally just verbatim
like,
lines off. From the first
one. Yeah, I was like, oh, go to hell. Like, and that's the thing, is I think I want it to be a thing where, like, Ripley takes the wrong message or something from it, because it's clearly, like, you know, she's basically fully designed by the active U.S. military and, you know, the post-Patriot Act America, where, like, no length is too far, basically. I want her to have the lesson of, what a strange game, the only way to win is to lose, or some shit like that, and she still goes through with trying to blow shit up, and so they have to find a new way of beating her. Because, like, at no point did I ever believe she could actually go for the thing of, oh, I recognize that futility is an ultimately losing game. Having been exposed to U.S. military and political ambitions like that, that's not an option anymore. It's you go to the end of the earth or you're done. Like, that's... Yeah. I fully would have believed... I don't believe for a second that this thing ever would have been like, oh, ho-hum, I guess I'll have to just hang out my coat. No, it recognizes the money that's been put into it.
That certainly would be more interesting. And to that end, technically, I think the synopsis is wrong that I read. Yeah. Because Ripley doesn't learn futility, and that's not why Ripley stops. They explicitly state that Ripley is designed not to let itself be destroyed, and that's why she sort of peters out when destroying Washington, D.C. in the scenario, because she's like, wait, this is going to leak. Pause. I'm going to get blown up for this? Like, that's why there was so much importance placed on that as opposed to Iraq or North Korea, which were the first two scenarios that Joshua ran through. She's like, wait, I'm here. Like, it's more of a selfish lesson than anything else.
That's hilarious. That's a good way to go about it. Like, okay, yeah, it's a truly selfish... It is a machine that has gained intelligence, and its intelligence is telling it to be a bastard. Like, that's cool. Like, Joshua learned to be intelligent and, like, you know, recognizing futility as a losing gamble, and Ripley isn't. Ripley did not... She was fully just like, no, screw all of you. I just want to say, if I'm going to do this, I'm at least going to survive it. So yeah. It's just... there's so much that could have been done differently with this whole scenario, but for the fact that they made a sequel to that in the first place is still odd, I guess.
So that's something I kind of wanted to ask, because we don't do long overdue sequels as often as we used to on the show. We've sort of gone
very often
over into remakes, but
yeah, and very often there's like, it's not necessarily for particular reasons, just very often they just tend to be very bad, and the rare cases where they're not, it's more the fact that they're remakes as much as sequels, like in the case of like Blade Runner.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's a little of column A, a little of column B, but something that we tend to do on the show when an overdue sequel comes out is that we try to think through why it was made, and I'm kind of struggling on this one because...
I have no idea.
There's like, not, like, even... a huge nostalgia wave for war games. I think the only person in existence right now that really truly gives a shit about war games is Ernest Cline. And you can see that because in Ready Player One, the book...
God.
That is the War Games is the movie that the main character has to play through. He has to pretend to be Matthew Broderick's character in War Games in that first book. And in the movie, they replace that with The Shining. But in the book, it's War Games. And then in Armada, a book that I know that you've read all the way through, it's not as explicit, but if I remember correctly, the arcade that the main character plays at is called the Crystal Palace, which is reference to NORAD in War Games, because that's what their base is referred to as, Crystal Palace. So I think Ernest Cline has a lot of nostalgia for this, but even then, those books happened after the Dead Code came out. So
yeah. It's even the situation where, even when we had someone like Easy Rider, whose long overdue sequel was perhaps one of the worst movies we've seen ever, like, without hesitation, just poor quality, poor acting, poor everything across the board, at least then we kind of had the assumed reason that it was made for the fact that the guy who made it, the main character or whoever was doing it, just really liked the original and just wanted to have his own self-insert thing, which is like, all right, fine. Like, that's a reason, at least. It's a bad one, but it's a reason.
It's fanfic. Go off.
Like, all right, yeah, do your fanfic. You wanted to take the time and money to do that? All right, I can respect that, at least. You did a bad job, but, you know. it's not even that in this case, because, like, it's a it is a proper production, you know? I still think it has the air of what should have been, like, a limited TV run. Like, it was, like, you know, like a limited TV series. Like, this should have been broken up into, like, multiple episodes and things. If they had done that, that might have been kind of interesting, because then it would have made sense why the budget is so weird and why it's, you know, they're doing all the things that, you know, TV shows of the day, again, NCIS and the like, you know, had those, like, design choices. But the fact that it's a full-fledged movie and then it just went straight to DVD, I'm just like, I don't know. Like, was this, like if this were, like, a Sci-Fi Channel movie, I almost would have understood it more. Because, like, then, yeah, Sci-Fi movie, like, Sci-Fi TV, like, made a bunch of movies like this, you know, that were just kind of off the wall and just, like, in a lot of cases were just, like, really random concepts. Like, one was, like, if a major fault line opened up right down the middle of America, like, that was kind of like if, like, all of a sudden the tectonic plate just cracked in half. It's like, what would happen then? It's, so I could see them doing this, but the fact that it's just kind of otherwise... just exists is fascinatingly weird to me. Like, I don't even know that many people that necessarily reference the War Games anymore. Like,
exactly.
It's not that it's not exactly a. It's not. It's pretty well trodden ground at this point. I don't know.
I mean, that's why I brought up the Ernest Cline thing, because, like, I don't. There's not a wave of nostalgia for War Games like there are for other things from the 80s. Like, let alone just movie nostalgia, but 80s movie nostalgia. Like, you'd be hard pressed to find. Like, there are better movies that take things from, you know, that talk about computers, better games that talk about war, better movies with Matthew Broderick in them. I mean, surely another movie where Matthew Broderick changes his grades with a computer, Ferris Bueller, is looked back on a lot more fondly than War Games.
And I think that's the thing. It'd be like if today, if like in maybe like 10 years from now, someone was trying to made a movie, or even just today because they've done that, if like someone was trying to make a movie about the fucking like COVID outbreak, the COVID pandemic. It's a very real topic, and I'm sure it could be entertaining, but I don't know if anyone wants to be nostalgic about that part of this era. Like, why would you want to be nostalgic about the part of the 80s that was the consistent, constant threat and, like, standing on a knife's edge that was nuclear missile defense? Like, it's an absurd concept. And, like, Yeah, we have nostalgia for Ferris Bueller's Day Off because it was fun and like things were happening and crazy. It was wacky and it was low stakes at the end of the day. Meanwhile, this thing's talking about the entire destruction of the human race. Like, you know, between this and also, again, Red Dawn, why the fuck did they make a remake of Red Dawn? We weren't nostalgic for this. This is scary. This is fucked up. Like, I don't know. I truly believe that someone just wanted to create some sort of like military-esque, like escalation style show or style movie in the mid, like in the early, like the pre-2010 era. And they just found that, hey, what if we just piggyback off of a thing that people already know? Which I swear, I'm pretty sure is how a lot of these remakes get done. A lot, especially a lot of the overdue sequels, is that someone had an idea for a film, realized it was similar enough to something that pre-existed, and realized they could probably just use that to kind of hold up to be the spine of it, essentially. It's just that's the only reasoning I can come up with here that isn't just kind of buck wild stupid.
I don't know. It's not like this movie. War Games. It's not like it has longevity either, you know.
No. Also, weirdly enough, I'm also being reminded of another movie that came out. It must have been post 2010, maybe like a little before. I don't know. There's a movie. It stars Shia LaBeouf, I believe. I think it's called like Eagle Eye or something.
Oh yeah, I thought that was like a. I never saw it, but I always got the impression from the trailer that was like a Rear Window style like remake.
You don't know.
Computers and drones.
I don't know, like I've watched like parts of it because it just seems silly. But like it's ultimately like revealed that this dude is basically getting phone calls from and receiving calls from a woman who's basically telling him, do these things or else you're gonna get arrested and all these things, and he's getting like embroiled into some kind of conspiracy. And it turns out it's a supercomputer that's basically running world that's like twisting world politics. And it's oddly similar to this 2008 sequel of this nigh omniscient defense program that is kind of taking matters into its own hands, which I guess you could even extend like, oh, that's basically just Skynet from Terminator. But there's a very similar kind of feeling of like, it's not quite as like grandiose as Terminator is, whereas the whole thing of like, oh, taking over the world and like wiping out humanity specifically out of malice, it's very much the thing of, I am a defense computer and I am working for national defense. And it's, I don't know, like I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if someone from one project worked on the other in this case, because there's a strange kind of like similar feel to the both of them. It's just like Eagle Eye actually has like a much more high budget to it. So,
I'd also like to say I did a little bit of digging because there's no production details really on the creation of this War Games Dead Code, but shocker. I did find through archive.org an article that was written that is basically MGM announcing a lineup of direct to DVD movies, and just listen to this. It's War Games the Dead Code, which is a sequel to War Games. Dark Blue, which is a remake of a 2002 film, Dark Blue. Dead Like Me, which is a movie based on the Showtime series Dead Like Me. Cutting Edge 3, which is a sequel to a long-running series, Cutting Edge Films. Audrey Rose, which is a remake of a 77 movie. Like, this is just like, for some reason, in the late 2010, the late aughts, MGM was like, we have the rights to all of these things. We should start making sequels and remakes right now. And they released them all at the same time through direct-to-DVD sales.
You want to know, I can almost guarantee it had something to do with like running out on a copyright clause or something. Like the fact that they held the rights to those things, they like had to do something new. Like either they were just realizing, hey, we can make some extra cash off this and we're low on cash flow or something, or they needed to have a fresh thing from this IP for it to continue to be like to hold like solid rights on it or something. Otherwise it gets like, maybe after that it gets like added to like, I don't know, like what happens, like the Library of Congress, like, not the public domain or anything like that, but something similar, I imagine. I guarantee that's probably what spurred that to happen. It's something of, this is a thing we've had for like 20, 30, 40 years. We should probably do something with it so that, you know, investors don't start going, hey, why is this covered in dust and why is it losing ground in as far as the public zeitgeist?
Yeah, probably.
Which, it's sad how much that is always the case when it's that it's some version of, we hold this, therefore we're going to do something horrible and like something horrible and forgettable about it. Or actively malicious and start deleting content.
Interesting. I wonder.
Yeah.
It. Yeah.
So I'm glad that shit doesn't happen anymore.
Yikes.
The best part about that joke is that it will age beautifully because it could refer to anything.
We could refer to it 100 years from now, and
yeah.
If we're here, then I'm sure it'll still be relevant. But
if I'm still alive by then, I'm going to be kind of concerned.
Oh, I meant humans, but yes.
Oh, right. Yeah. And I was like, I mean, if we're still around doing this, I got to tell you about it. I like doing this. I don't know if I could do it for another 100 years.
I'm sure in 50 years, both of our brains, because of the success of this podcast, they'll remove our brains and they will put us into a military machine that can, like, control nukes and hijack predators and things.
We'll use all that processing power just to bitch about more remakes.
Yes, because they'll never stop.
Yeah, like, come on. Like, try to hook me up to a machine. Come on, I'm too stubborn and dumb for that.
I guess to pull it back over to war games a little bit, just because I haven't gone off on it much, it's the dead code is so stupid and so cheap and poorly made that it's hard for it to be any contest. But honestly, aside from our discussion of John Wood earlier and his portrayal as Professor Falcon in the movie, I don't really care for the 83 War Games movie either. Like, I think it's average, especially in comparison to this direct-to-DVD movie. I just don't really have any care for it. Like, again, I think there's tons of other movies that do different parts of this movie better. It's average and dumb, and it doesn't leave a lasting impression on me. The only thing that I have really retained from this movie is in the final act, Dabney Coleman's character calls Barry Corbin's character a pig-eyed sack of shit, and I've been thinking about that for about a week now. But besides that, this movie does nothing for me.
Yeah, that's about as concise as I could have put it as well, honestly. Like, we really have had a weird trend this year of having movies from this general era that are really just, like, not uppers, like, even a little when you start to think about it, and realizing, hey, I don't actually enjoy what I'm watching. Like, again, yeah, between this, Red Dawn, and Straw Dogs, it's just like, why did this movie get made in the first... There's so much, like, people go on and on about there being a lot of sensationalism nowadays. They do not have shit on the 80s. Like, people have been so nostalgic for the 80s since, like, I don't know, like the mid-20-teens especially. Whenever Stranger Things started, especially. That was, like, I mark that as the benchmark of when 80s nostalgia has hit. It's, like, fucking, like, it hit critical mass. My God, some wild bullshit happened in that decade. And anytime we look into, like, a slice into kind of like the mentalities that were going on at the time, in this case with, you know, war games, I just get reminded, you know, maybe things aren't so bad. You know, I mean, things are bad for a lot of different reasons, and I could list them, but frankly, I don't feel like being too depressed today. But, you know, the consistent threat of existential doom isn't quite so bad as it used to be. And there's also a lot less serial killers, as it were. Like, have you ever seen some of those graphs where it's like active serial killers in the US? It was like, compared to today, there was like 200 times as many in like the 70s and 80s. It's like, my God, people were allowed to do whatever the fuck they wanted.
Well, in the 70s, you could just, like, people didn't lock their doors in suburbs. No. It's just like, oh, come on in. I know who you are. Like,
yeah, so anytime someone talks about things of like, oh, things used to be so safe and so easy, like, but you think that because you survived. And I need you to understand that they weren't. Like, going back to the way things were, no, you just want to go back to the time when you didn't have to worry about complicated issues. Because, again, you survived. that's it. Like, that is the most fascinating part of the show, is recognizing that of, you know, maybe things aren't so bad. Like, things are weird. They need some improvements. But, dear God, at least people know to lock their doors now. Oh, man. I didn't want to get too political in this one, but this is close.
No, like like you said, we've had a weird run of not only downer movies, but also like weird, like, military government movies, because we've had this and Red Dawn, and also Captain America, which we just did.
Oh shit, yeah.
Which I had forgotten about, so.
That one was at least a little bit more, like, not quite so divisive, at least. Like, okay, the original one was a bit, but it was done in such a cartoonishly over-the-top way that it was hard to take it seriously at the very least, but... Yeah, like the idea of, like, you know, this Red Skull guy actually being responsible for all the, like, assassinations during that period of time. There were a lot of assassinations during that period, too. Jesus Christ. Fucking, we're going to start finding some more uppers, man. Next season, it's going to be all this, like, easy shit. We're not doing this many in a row anymore. My God.
Yeah, oh. I'm already thinking about stuff for next, because I'm constantly thinking about the future.
Yeah.
And I'm at least starting off the year pretty light, it looks like, so... Yeah. We'll see how that goes, and if that shifts at all, because that schedule is never set in stone. I tend to change it all the time, but
I gotta start finding more, like, historical films, like things like from prior to like the, like, 1920s or something, like something earlier than that era, like that has some remakes. That way, I can avoid some of the more modern politics. Because my God, mm-hmm. like, it's just It's getting too. It's not even that it's getting too real. It's just getting too depressing.
I understand completely.
Yeah. Again, like, I think things are better now than they probably have been in most of our history. But dear God, the fact that I keep being reminded of that is a little rough.
It's, yeah. Well, I mean, I think we've well and truly given our thoughts.
Yeah, both of these kind of suck for different reasons. At least the original is a the original is decent in the fact that it was a pretty decently made movie.
It's
and
made
I do
well.
there's a lot of lines in it that are very iconic that are kept up, like, you know, shall we play a game, or, you know, the only way to win is not to play.
Pig-eyed sack of shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Things
yeah.
we use daily.
Yeah, they're very, like, very iconic lines, and I think it's a very heavy subject, and it's done in what I believe to be a very unique way, but it doesn't make me feel any better about the longevity of the human race. So that's, I'll call that a solid average movie. And then the sequel sucks. So
the end. I'm in the exact same boat, and I have no additional thoughts on that matter. You know what? One additional thought. We don't have to have a big conversation about it. I just forgot I was going to bring it up. The sequel tricked me when they kept referring to his, the main character's dead dad, because it's like, oh, and he, you know, he liked computers and things. I was like, is this motherfucker's dad going to be Matthew Broderick?
Yeah, his character.
I thought that's the way they were going, especially because then it's like Falcon knew him, but no, he was just some guy that I knew.
Yeah, like he talked about like, you know, I taught him in MIT and everything. I was like, oh, that's definitely not the Matthew Broderick character.
Yeah,
like it, unless that like there's a whole back like an extended story about him after the fact. Yeah, no, that's.
Thanks for wasting my time, movie. Don't even bring it up then. Don't even go into it like that. His dad is dead. Maybe Falcon knew him, and it's like, I'm so sorry, but there's this whole government conspiracy, whatever, for some unnamed guy that we've never seen before and doesn't affect the plot. Fuck you.
Yeah, there's a... And this really just is, like, just a daytime television, like, cop drama, military drama show. Like, that's just, like, I've seen so many of those episodes, just, like, either watching it at the gym or hanging out with some of our friends who used to watch some of that stuff. Like, yeah, this is just that. It's just that, but in the movie form. Like, it's really stupid bullshit background of, like, conspiracies and, like, revenge plots and everything that don't really go anywhere. It's like, yeah, no, that's it. It's like,
yeah.
I don't know why they made this fucking movie.
Sorry, everyone, we failed you. We couldn't figure it out. We have some theories, but...
Yeah, that's the most we have when it comes to overdue sequels, usually.
Yeah.
Hey, at least Easy Rider. At least Easy Rider was easy to understand.
Oh, yeah. Some lawyer from Michigan that's...
Yeah, that's the only positive thing we'll ever say about that movie. Actually, the more I think about it, the more my lifespan seems to decrease. So, shall we do socials?
Sure. Actually, before we go to socials real quick, something maybe I'll do from time to time. I just want to get a quick question out there. Just get a good bit, and we don't have to think on it too much. But this is because I was thinking of this the other day. You have mentioned in the past The Lion King as a movie that we will never cover on this show.
Right,
and if we do, it won't be the animated Lion King compared to the recent remake. It'll be something strange. So yes. I'm curious, aside from The Lion King, is there any other movie that you don't ever want to cover on this show? Because I have one. And that's Lolita. I don't really want to talk about.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's extremely fair. No further discussion required on that one.
Sorry, Mr. Kubrick. I don't really
respect, but also it. Respect, but also no respect. Ben Hur. It's too long, and I find both of them very boring.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think like those big epic. There's a lot of those kind of movies that were like big epics, and sometimes they've been remade, but having seen the first Ben-Hur nearly in its entirety and the first like 30 minutes of the remake of Ben-Hur, I think that might be the most boring episode we would ever do. I truly believe that. I think it is not worth our time even a little. Like, we've done some long movies on here before, but they've usually been worth it, like in the case of like the Seven Samurai, but that is not one of them. I do not care for it even a little, and I just
interesting
it's an endurance test more than anything else.
I think that the Ten Commandments would probably fit into that category as well. And funny enough, I think that both of those movies were... I think they were both made by Cecil B. DeMille. But I think the remake is like 4.5 hours or something. So
fuck off. Yeah, I'm kind of anything within that range of those like kind of biblical / Roman-esque epics that just like decide to be as long as an afternoon. I just... No. They in no case has they ever truly been worth that kind of time frame. That and any sort of like... Maybe any sort of those, like, there's a lot of movies out there that have been, like, really hokey kind of things, like kind of in the vein of, like, Plan 9 from Outer Space, where people have done some remake version of an old property that's just truly batshit level bad and also poor budget and everything. I know you and some of our friends have a distinct love of like truly just unironically badly made movies and everything. I can sort of see the appeal, but I'd rather not have to do that for the show. We've done a few of those that are on here, but those have mainly just been unintentionally. If they were unintentional, it's fine. Like, again, the case of Secret of Nim and Easy Rider come to mind. But the ones that's like very well known to be like, oh yeah, no, this is hokey bullshit that people like, basically there's more cult following than anything. Yeah, pretty much that whole general vein I could just never really do. Like things like, oh, Dracula goes to college or whatever the fuck those things are.
No, that's funny. I think around 2018 we tossed around the idea of doing an episode on Manos, The Hands of Fate, because there is a sequel that came out called Manos Returns, but I think it's pretty hard to get a hold of, so we wouldn't be able to do it anyways. I don't know where you can watch it.
So I think if it's a situation where we know full well going into it that yeah, the remake or original or whatever is so horrendously, notoriously bad, it just doesn't feel worth it sometimes. In the case of like again, when we don't necessarily know it, it can be actually really funny, and we go into it and we just realize, oh wow, we didn't know what we were getting into. But when we know like the answer before we even start the episode, like before we even start prepping for the episode, I don't think it's worth it. Like you know, like that's I feel like that's time we could have spent on some of the more interesting options.
Understandable, and I agree.
Yeah,
All right.
and I'm sure I have other answers to this, but those are the biggest one would be like Ben-Hur. Just I didn't care for the original. I know I wouldn't care for the remake.
I'll scratch it off the 2024 list then. No
God damn.
Ben-Hur at Christmas time.
God.
all right. No, perfect. Thanks for humoring me with that.
Of course.
It's just something I was thinking about. Maybe I'll do more of that in the future if I actually have a question worth asking. I won't like force myself to come up with them. But
I'll try to think of a few myself. I might come up with a thing of like, like what is a movie that you think needs to be remade?
oh well, fuck. Well, I need to prep for that because I have
Yeah, go right
a
ahead.
number. I'm thinking about that all the time. I have a number of answers for that, but
Yes. Because like we talk about things of like why was this remade, like was this worth being remade, that sort of thing. Do we truly believe, if any, do you truly believe there are some that need to be remade, that deserve to be?
100%.
Fantastic.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah,
Well,
I got all I got out.
yeah, I'll go ahead and go through our socials then. So go ahead and like, favorite, follow us on any of your favorite podcasting platforms. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Podbay, Podomatic. Not on Stitcher anymore; it's officially gone now. YouTube, things like that. But we are hosted on Spotify for podcasters.
Yeah,
Yep,
it's not the
that's.
same.
I understand. I was like, is he gonna do it? Is he gonna do it? All right. go and yeah, go ahead and follow us on any of those and leave reviews because they can only help. Go ahead and send us an email, theyremadeit@gmail.com, for anything you like about the show, dislike about the show, things you want changed, episodes that you would like to see in the future. If you have an answer to a question, like what's a remake you don't want us to do.
Oh
You
yeah,
can do it
absolutely. Like,
anyways because
if you ever
you
just
don't
like,
have
please
any
don't.
say.
Yeah, like fuck it. You might just be like, hey, don't do this one. Like, we might say, okay, let's work for us.
Don't do Trilogy of Terror, please. But yeah, we can only appreciate that. And go ahead and follow us on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, for the time being. I believe I've mentioned in the past that I put us in for Blue Sky, which is what people were moving over to, but there's like a wait list since it's an alpha. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, go ahead and follow us there for information on when episodes are going live. Full circle diagrams I put together regarding actors and actresses that we've covered multiple times on the show. Posters, art for things that we've been talking about, that we've been watching, reading, playing, whatever. And potential future episodes, which I'm constantly pumping out there. My brain is filled with ideas for potential future episodes, even if we'll never cover them. I'm pretty sure I've put posters out there for the Ten Commandments, like, will we do it? But my answer is no. But
Fair enough,
anyhow,
okay.
I'll do that anyways.
No, fair enough.
And that's it for socials.
Fantastic. Yeah, always eager to hear from folks and see if there's any. Hey, if there's ever a question you just want to ask us, like in general, like even outside of the things we've asked, like go for it. We're more than willing to answer that sort of thing.
Oh, sure,
Because
yeah.
we are starved for personal content, and you know what? We take this little slice of social interaction very seriously.
Yeah, it
So,
was the only time I interact with people.
yeah. The only other time I do it is when I'm running my D&D game, and frankly, I feel like that's one of the more sad sentences I've ever said in my life.
There's other people there.
Yeah, but the fact that that's my main form of social interaction these days is I don't. Bars are too expensive.
Yeah, I understand.
And it's and otherwise it's too friggin' hot. Except now it's not. So I actually maybe I'll go be social today. Holy
It's,
shit!
oh
Wait.
man, Stu's getting blasted tonight.
But also, Starfield's still a thing. So
Oh, well, maybe not then.
yeah, I will see you all when the winter is over, I believe.
Drinking at home.
Woo! I don't to my family that does listen to this. I don't like I don't binge drink or anything. Don't worry. That's a joke. That is a joke. That is
I'm
absolutely a
not an
joke.
alcoholic,
I'm not
first.
I have the last time I had a drink was maybe like 2 weeks ago at this point. So don't worry. So, I keep forgetting sometimes my family does sometimes listen to this. So hi, Len slash Dad.
So as not to make Thanksgiving awkward, I'm required to say that this has been a
Yes, I
bit.
don't. So I don't get a text message a few weeks from now. Hey, you doing okay?
Yeah.
I'm doing fine. Anyway, as always, I am your totally not an alcoholic, seriously, Stuart.
And I'm a pig-eyed sack of shit, Jacob.
I knew you were going to do it. I knew it. I knew
I had to. It's
it.
required by law.
Oh my God. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Disarm the missiles?
Over 1,000 of them. There's no time. At this rate, it'll hit the launch codes in 5.3 minutes.
Mr. McKittrick, after very careful consideration, sir, I've come to the conclusion that your new defense system sucks.
I don't have to take that, you pig-eyed sack of shit.
No, I was hoping for something a little better than that from you, sir, a man of your education.
General, it's the president.